Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to NaNoWriMo Every Month. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 24 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and other things, and I am your guide on this quest to raise your output to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life. Welcome to episode 11 in our ongoing series about writing Hadrian's Flight, a young adult science fiction adventure in the Heinleinian mold, which I wrote in 34 days over the course of this last August and a little bit of July. Before I get going too far, I just wanted to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by BundleRabbit.com, the place where you, an author, can meet other authors and curate bundles and swap books in order to cross-fertilize audiences and create interesting new ways for readers to discover you. That's BundleRabbit.com. Sign up for free and tell them I sent you so they'll keep supporting this podcast. Anyway, when last we left Hadrian, he had just discovered that Malcolm and Syl had been having him on all this time. It's a hell of a betrayal. But it creates even more trouble for him because when Karis hears all of this, she realizes that a lot more has been going on than he has let her in on. And she basically demands a full confession from him. She wants to know all the pieces on the board so that she can rescue her mother without getting killed. And this is the point when it all comes out. Syl's attempts to seduce Hadrian, Hadrian's complicated relationship with Malcolm and Syl as a married couple, the entire history of making friends with them on the Buckman and of them helping him out when he found out about his mother's death. He lays it all out, expecting pretty much that he's going to lose his friendship, and then keeps going, because, you know, teenage boy, once you uncork him, he can't stop. And he goes all the way up to confessing that he's attracted to Karis, and he's kind of falling in love with her, and he doesn't know what to do about any of this, and he just goes on and on. And that's a thread that's been building through this whole story, because, hey, you get two relative strangers who like each other, they're both teenagers, they're thrown together in traumatic circumstances, feelings are going to develop. Unless there's a particular reason they find each other unattractive, feelings are going to develop. That's human nature. He gets done with all of this, expecting to get thrown out, and Karis starts laughing. She explains to him the nature of honey trapping. She lays out for him all of the tricks that they have used to con him, and how he's managed to avoid most of them basically by being himself. So now they have to decide what they're going to do. Before Karis elicited the confession from Hadrian, she had him stow all his clothes in the back room. She told him through a note so that they wouldn't be overheard. Then, once his confession is done, she explains to him how they can use the fact that they're under surveillance to their advantage. They check the rest of the apartment for bugs to make sure there aren't other ways that they're being monitored. And then they sit down and they plan. And they dive deep into the scheming. They work out a way to rescue Karis's mother from her captivity. Since Karis's mother is being held up near the hub, with no way in or out, what they've got to do is they've got to find a way in through a wall. Of course, all the walls are exposed to the open air in the middle of the cylinder. The whole station is a spinning cylinder, kind of like Babylon 5. The official style is called an O'Neill cylinder because it was a scientist named O'Neill who developed the idea. So they're in an O'Neill cylinder, and Karis's mother is being held up at the hub, off in the middle where there's no way to get to her other than to go through the front door. Unless you have a flying suit designed for use in low gravity, or no gravity, which Hadrian has. Now, from the point of view of the writer, I realized that Malcolm and Syl were phonies really early on. It wasn't right when they were introduced, but it was a little ways in. I started recognizing the kinds of games they were playing on Hadrian, even though Hadrian himself didn't, and I figured about half the reading audience wouldn't. I recognized the kinds of games they were playing on him, and I couldn't figure out for a while whether they were CIA or whether they were working for his aunt and were running numbers on him in order to control him, or whether they were working for someone else entirely, you know, the Persians, the Loonies, someone else. It was over the course of their relationship that I discovered who it was they were working for, and I discovered who they were working for about 3 chapters before Hadrian himself did. But by the time they reached the station, I had a pretty good idea that Malcolm and Syl were not on Hadrian's side. So through that whole time, I'd been working on how they were eventually going to come to Loggerheads. And there were three or four attempts that I made along the way that I wound up dropping back and excising because they didn't work. They were too forced. I was trying too deliberately to do it until I finally just sat back and let the story write itself. I had a good setup up to this point, and I decided I just needed to trust what my subconscious was doing. So after I got over that freak out and started doing things the way I should be doing them, this all unfolded like this. Min is being kept up here. Well, Hadrian's entire life is spent on the wing. He's been, since he got to Nineveh, he's been trying to figure out how to establish a business doing wingsuit flying, which I haven't covered in here because it's a secondary plot that goes along and not, and wasn't up until this point, directly related to the main plot of the novel. But Hadrian has these suit designs, and Karis and Hadrian are both expert flyers. So they have some suits printed up. They enlist the help of Karis's friends in the bar, who are in fact in the intelligence game, but they're not in the CIA. They're on Karis's side. The reason Karis has been working there is so that she will be able to get a tip-off if word about her mother comes through the resistance network. So Hadrian discovers as a result of this reversal that he has access to a lot more resources than he thought he had. And this is a very good thing, because not only do he and Karis have to, without being seen by anyone, fly up to the hub, tunnel in through a wall, pull Min out, Min is Karis's mother, Hadrian's aunt, and fly her out to the disembarkation spaceport, they have to make it through there to the spaceship and blow station before Malcolm and Syl can raise an alarm and have their ship locked down. Now, this is a commercial station. It's got no official allegiance to anybody. And for anyone who's familiar with how things worked in international cities during World War II, the international cities are a place basically where the government officials are for sale to the highest bidder. So there's no official government policy, but one official or another at key pinch points can be bribed to tilt the balance of things in one direction or another. And those players may be on the take from multiple people at a time. So there is no good way to know how much time they're going to be able to buy themselves because they don't know who Malcolm and Syl have bought off. So they've got to make all of this happen very quickly. They enlist the aid of their intelligence buddies, and they make their plan, and their plans get made up from the confluence of expertise. See, Hadrian's got this direct experience with Malcolm and Syl, and he's designed the wingsuits. Karis knows how these kinds of things work, but she also understands the sexual and psychological dynamics that Malcolm and Syl were trying to exploit in Hadrian in order to gain control over him. So she realizes that playing that angle up is going to be able to buy them some time. Since they've been under surveillance, Malcolm and Syl will have noticed the growing sexual tension between the two of them, so Karis decides that the best way to cover the fact that they're sneaking out at night in order to perform this rescue operation is to fake a long night in bed together. And so they do. They go into the other room where the bugs aren't, and they record this fake sexual encounter, and then with editing and whatnot, they create a loop of music and sex and music and sex that can play all night so that they're busy and Malcolm and Syl get tired of listening to them and assume that they're staying put, which will give them plenty of time to get into position, and hopefully Malcolm and Syl won't see them coming right up until the moment where they cut through the wall and trigger the fire alarm because they're using plasma torches. This is the plan. It takes them a couple of chapters to make this plan, and all the threads in the story come together to make this plan work. Everything that I put on the table early on that I didn't even realize I was putting on the table was available to me here, and I pulled it all together and wove it up in a good solid rope in order to hang the climax on. The climax was the next thing I did, and for that one, well, I'll talk to you next time in a couple of days. Until then, I'll see you tomorrow.
NaNoWriMo Every Month is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and produced by Artistic Whispers Productions. Visit our website at NaNoWriMoEveryMonth.com and leave a tip in the tip jar or join the Patreon to support this podcast. NaNoWriMo Every Month is copyright 2016 by J. Daniel Sawyer and Artistic Whispers Productions and is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution no derivatives license.